You know, there are all kinds of interesting people who live right around your neighborhood, like, oh, the publicist, the rights distribution manager.
Would you look at that? It's people in your neighborhood on 95BFM.
Oh, hi there.
Shh, listen.
Today I'd like to introduce Dean Cameron from Recorded Music New Zealand. He's the Distribution and Member Services Manager.
Thank you.
Welcome Hello. Back to the studio.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
Apparently Dean was a host of Hard, Fast and Heavy for a while.
I think it was Viva La Hardcore that changed its name for a stage, late 90s, but kind of did appearances on Hard, Fast and Heavy over the years prior, just when other people were doing it.
Oh, with Richie?
I was sort of before Richie, yeah, and then I went overseas and I think Richie probably took over from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
how he got his name?
Richie Hardcore?
Yeah, Viva La Hardcore.
No, I think he's just Richie Hardcore.
He was just born that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you so much for coming up. And I just wanted to ask you a few questions about recorded music.
Yeah.
Are you able to tell us what Recorded Music New Zealand does and what it's responsible for?
Yeah, sure. So Recorded Music New Zealand represents recording artists and record labels here in New Zealand. So that's, that's the majors, obviously the big three, Sony, Warner, Universal, plus Indies, and anyone who's essentially releasing music in this territory. And then we also have a direct relationship with all the New Zealand artists. So currently we have registered on our books 3,300 of them or so, as such, and that means they register and assign their rights to us for collection of performance and broadcast income.
Cool. And so can you explain what makes Recorded Music New Zealand different from APRA?
Sure. So with a piece of recorded music, there's two copyrights. There's the composition and the songwriting. So essentially that's administered by APRA. So as a songwriter, if there's one or there's multiples within a work, you would register your percentages or your shares with APRA. And then there's the sound recording. So the sound recording could be paid for by a record company, or it could be, especially in today's world, essentially a lot of artists are retaining their own rights, essentially. So they're the songwriter, the recording artist, and the record label. So both those are monetizable. So as such, so I mean, to put it simply, if we use BFM as an example, so BFM will have a license with both APRA and Recorded Music. And so when your track as an artist gets paid, there's two payments. There's one for the songwriter and the composer, and then there's one for the recording artist and the record label, if that's the case, if they're signed or such, or if the artist controls everything, they'll receive 100% of any royalties payable.
Wow. So if they have, so you can have different splits on a recording, master recording as well, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's how we work is we register the artist, not the individual shares. And the record company. So if there's a record company involved, it's a 50-50 split. But if the artist is just registered direct, it's 100% will go to the artist. We don't register the individuals from that band, as in, say there's five in the group. We have someone that's called a nominated claimant that acts on behalf of the artist. And if there are any sort of third-party payments that need to be made from shares of income, that lies with the artist and the record company.
Right, so I guess to break that down, when we look at a publishing or a songwriting split, when we talk about splits, we're talking about the percentage shares owned of that work.
Sure.
But with master recording, we're talking about one, like it might be U2 looks after, administers it on like 50% with their record label.
Sure.
And then their accountant would split it out.
So the record, like in a sync deal side of thing, the record company will essentially do the license, collect the income, and then it'll get paid through whatever the royalty channels are.
Yeah.
But from a broadcast side of things, so the royalties that we collect, so when we license radio, television, and online, some online services and such, for the communication broadcast of sound recordings, we have what's called the Director Recording Artist Scheme, which is only eligible for New Zealand recording artists, and that's where the artist can register no matter what their situation is with a record company or not. So it just depends on the splits as such. So then they will receive something directly instead of going through the channels of, say, a third party.
Right. So if they're an independent artist, they still need to get in touch with you they do with APRA.
Yeah, totally.
And register.
I mean, essentially, at the time of when you're completing a record or getting it ready to release, that is the time to do it. We're going to talk about something called ISRC codes in due course. So, but
We can talk about that now.
Yeah. So, I mean, generally, you would have been in the studio and you've tracked your songs. It's mixed. It's going to the master engineer. Then you might hear this word called ISRC code. Now, an ISRC code stands for International Standard Recording Code. Essentially, what it is, it's an identifier. It's unique. With recordings and tracks these days, there are trillions of them. And they very similar titles, same artist names, etc. So you have this alphanumerical sequence that essentially your track is known by behind the scenes. Especially in the digital world today, you need one. If you want to release your music digitally on services like Spotify, Apple, iTunes, etc., you have to have one. Without one, they won't accept it. So Recorded Music New Zealand is the agent or the national agency for ISRC in New Zealand. So we manage what we call ISRC registrant codes, which we issue to labels, and then we have codes that we manage internally just for smaller artists from all levels. And then when that track is streamed, downloaded as such, it's accounted that way. So, because obviously it's a lot easier than having like a alpha sequence, and it's also used in broadcast as well. So it's some radio stations may report like that. Television, for example, we fingerprint TV, so it's a bit like having a big MySky. So that's how we identify all the recordings from the codes and then ingest it into our system. It's an identifier process. It's not the be all end all. I mean, still the artist and the track title is important, and it's one of the factors. But ISRC is definitely a way where we can cope with the vast amounts of data. The music industry has just become about data. It's all data, and from an artist's point of view of where their audience is, and Spotify for Artists, you log in and you can see the postcodes in the countries or the cities where you perform best. You might plan a tour around that, or your advertising campaigns, or whatever it is. So, and we just get streams and truckloads of data every day from broadcasters like yourself, TV stations, and anyone who uses music commercially.
Yeah, and so with those, I always get the R and the S right
around
the
ISRC.
So International Standard Recording Code.
Yeah.
They can contact Recorded Music New Zealand and get those, and they're free, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a really simple process. It's just basically an email, really. So the only information we require is your contact details. So obviously, who's requesting them? So that's just name, phone number, email, address. And then it's just the details of the recording. So the artist name, the recording title, the duration. And if it's off an album or a single or some sort of release, obviously that information is great. If you have things like barcodes or UPC and catalog numbers, that's fine, but it's not mandatory. You can also push those through. And then we'll use that data in our databases as well. And obviously we'll probably prompt the artist to register.
Yeah.
Because without a mandate, we can't collect royalties for you.
Yeah.
So essentially there is a process there for that. But it's a free service. It's pretty much, we issue a lot of them, and it is something that gets turned around pretty much on the spot, or within an hour or a couple of hours or something like that.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Thanks, Ben.
Definitely. So can you also tell us about a little bit about One Music and
sure.
how you collaborate with APRA on that, and about blanket licenses?
Yeah. So, yep. I mean, first, we operate in blanket licenses primarily, essentially where we will go, I'll use BFM if that's okay as an example. So we will provide a license to the radio station, and it's a blanket license. So they can play music that's covered within our repertoire, so within our mandates. And it's a sort of free-for-all as such. And that's primarily what we do. Now, One Music as such is a joint venture between APRA AMCOS and ourselves. That's for the public performance side of things. So that's where sound recordings and musical works are played in retail spaces, hospitality, anywhere, educational places, just anywhere where music's cafes, etc., wherever music's airplanes is used. And we used to do it individually. So we used to do it, we would have our own licensing people that would handle that, and APRA would have theirs. And quite often, you'd be going to some organ or some party to have a license put in place, and they'd be like, oh, I've got a license with the other one, and it just gets confusing.
Yeah.
and all that sort of thing. So we sat down with APRA, and well, they sat down with us too, and then worked out this license essentially. So it's one invoice. So it's, you know, when you take out a license, it's quoted, obviously, and it's just one payment. But then each organization has its own distribution models and ways that they work, and APRA has a few more rights that we can't claim on, like live performance, because we, mm-hmm. you know, sound recordings as such. So there can be a split in the money, and then it's paid out to each party, and then we have our own distribution processes.
Right. And do you have a formula for, because if you know, say like you had the King's Arms or something, mm. and say that was 800 people, and then you had Western Springs, and that's like 30,000 mm. people, do you have a different formula for...
Yeah, so that's on the live side yep. of things, so we don't get involved in that. That's yep. a strictly APRA yep. thing. So, yeah, I can't really answer that
yeah,
one.
Okay. But, I should have asked APRA that one.
Yeah,
yep.
yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, when there is a formula in regards to public performance, so it's depending on the size, you know. Yep. Yeah, yeah, totally. It's taken into consideration. So the size of a space, be it, a, you know, if it's a cafe that has, you know, 10, 20 seats or whatever, and then there's obviously venues that have a lot bigger as such, yeah, the license will be tailored to fit yeah. that, yeah.
So it is, like, taken into consideration.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah, yeah. I remember, because the cool thing is that One Music has now branched out into Australia, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. So...
That formula of yes. the two of APRA and
yeah.
their association working together.
It's actually branched out further afield as well, because it's a growth field for the industry as such. So yeah, so APRA and PPCA, which is the Australian equivalent of us, launched that in July 1st, I think, of yep. this year. So in Australia, and also I was in the UK recently, and PPL, PRS, which are the equivalents of, you know, both societies, they've been doing it for a year or two, and some other territories do it as well.
Yep.
So yeah, it's definitely something that I guess New Zealand's pretty proud that we sort of started it off.
Yep.
Sort of first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like with those other associations around the world, yep. does Recorded Music New Zealand have like a connection to them?
Yeah. Yeah. So we have bilateral agreements with not all, with kind of the main markets. So we have Australia, the US, and the UK. So that's where essentially if our members are receiving airplay in those territories, we can potentially bring royalties back for them. Now, it's not automatic, just for the reason that copyright laws are quite different in different parts of the world. And New Zealand is a little bit unique with the way that we do things on sound recordings. And also an artist can enter into its own agreements with parties around the world. So, for example, you release a record in New Zealand, you control it yourself, for example, but then you have a record company in the UK and they're taken care of in the UK. If that's the case, we couldn't collect it because right. the UK record company would be doing it and would be accounting back to you as an artist. So it's not something we do automatically for artists, so it's more on a request or application process. And you know, we actually go through our data and look at artists who we feel that would possibly fit that and contact them, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's also not just about money, really, isn't it?
No.
It's about data and seeing where, like, New Zealand music is being played and where
totally.
It's popular yeah. and all that kind of thing, which I think is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, if you go to a Going Global talk sure. or something like that, Recorded Music is always represented there, and they can give us amazing figures on the difference between digital sales and say vinyl
yeah,
and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we every year we'll publish we also analyze data, you know, for the industry here in New Zealand. So we publish all the stats on what's happening in our market as such. Obviously the recorded music market in the last few years has seen quite considerable growth, and primarily from streaming. So streaming makes up around 70-ish% of the sale of recorded music here, which is a lot.
Mm. Is that do you know in other countries what that's like?
It's kind of similar. I yeah. mean, there's always countries that are unique. For example, like Japan, it's mm-hmm. very much a domestic market, and they're very much still physical product.
Would they be CDs mostly?
Yeah, a mixture of CDs and vinyl, yeah, yeah. yeah. But yeah, some territories are very unique and have their own model, but generally we follow kind of global standards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, New Zealand, I mean, obviously having telcos on board with, you know, you have your Spark plan, you get a free Spotify account, that's been a big part of it as well. So,
yeah,
you know.
So I guess that is, because that is quite I mean, it's not unique, but it is. That's attributed to the massive growth of things like Spotify, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So if that hadn't have happened, like, it might still be what, iTunes or something. Don't know.
Who knows?
How long's a piece of
yeah,
string?
Yeah, exactly.
What's your kind of like most favorite kind, or like astounding, or something thing that kind of shocked you with the data that you've found, like that you've gone, wow, look at that.
I guess just the volume, you know, like, because in my job specifically, I don't look at sort of how the consumption of music every day. I'll sort of check in on it at various times. And, you know, from one time, there might have been X million streams a day. And now I think it's 20 million plus, you know.
Wow.
So just the growth. That's in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, obviously there's quite a tail in that. You have a bunch of, you know, music that is listened to very heavily, you know, and listener habits are very repetitive as well.
I mean,
we all do. We have our core things which we listen to, and we listen to them over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's like, because I guess the other thing that I'd like to talk about, if we can, is the New Zealand Top 40 charts.
Sure.
Because this data goes towards how they work, right?
Yeah. So the charts are various forms of data. So obviously there's, if we talk about the albums, obviously there's physical data in there, so that's vinyl and CD as well, and then there's a calculation based on streaming for the album, and that's put into it as well. I mean and then the singles chart is just strictly streaming data with a little bit of radio, if there was a physical product, but there's very little physical product sold, and downloads obviously in that as well, but they're declining.
Was there at one point like streaming was added and the sales of physical product, like the number was reduced to say get to a gold or something like that as well?
There's the calculation which it attributes to a sale of an album, should we say, from streaming. I don't have the exact things behind me, sorry. But so what makes up one genuine sale is then added and can put to the certification. So certifications are still the same.
Yeah.
But I mean there's a lot of them now as such. Yeah.
Wow, that's quite fascinating. Mm. And so can you tell us a bit about what your role is and what you're kind of involved in? And
sure.
Yeah.
So my primary role as member services manager is essentially repertoire, you know, so that our members as such. So that's from obviously gaining registrations and dealing with the record companies in regards to their repertoire and making sure that we have all the rights and everything, and ensuring that ultimately everyone's paid. So paid for their use. So that's that's the most important thing that I do. But there's a lot of education around that as well. So I do a lot of talking at, on seminars as such, just encouraging people to understand the industry and how it works, because it's not straightforward. You know, music is complicated behind the scenes, but there are a lot of income streams that are available to artists and rights holders as such. So it's important that they're aware of that and how that works. We have a grants program, which I administer, which is essentially for educational mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Educational, there's a little bit and charitable, and we do a little bit of archival stuff as well. So we have a small amount of our revenue is put aside each year, and it's a contestable fund, so anyone can apply.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so yeah. It's not for the recording, making a recording or going on tour. You know, there's other agencies that do that. And then obviously ISRC is a big thing, and just basic, you know, I get a lot of questions. People ring up and want to understand copyright or just want to know exactly what we do, or, you know, hey, yep. I've written some beats, I want to get them out to the world, or,
yep.
you know, what do I do, you know? So it's sort of giving them the options of where they can go and understanding, especially the digital world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how do I get my music on Spotify? How do you do that, et cetera? So, yeah.
And how did, can we talk about, how did you get into your role?
Yeah. Good question. I guess I've always been involved in music in my younger days, and played in some bands and things like that. I used to work in a bit of finance at some time, and
we've all done that.
Yeah, swore, went overseas for a while and came back and swore I'd never do it again. And I'd worked a bit of music retail, and this particular time I was actually working at Crawl Space Records.
Oh, wow.
Back in the 2000s. And just part-time, and a fax came over the fax machine, because obviously at that stage it was called REAN, so Recording Industry Association of New Zealand, and it sold what we call vouchers, you know, for sales.
Yep.
And so they just must have sent out this fax to their whole database saying, looking for someone. At that time, the fund, which is now called the Director Artist Scheme, was called the RAP Fund.
The RAP Fund. Yeah. Yep.
Acronyms. So which stood for Recording Artists and Producers. And so, yeah, I was like, what's this? I don't know what this is.
How are you part of the RAP Fund?
It's music and, you know, I'm interested. So I applied.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and yep. Had no idea about copyright or things like that. I just had worked, you know, had worked closely alongside more like the live side of things and sort of making records and retail and things and sort of got in through that. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a long time ago.
I do think it's quite a fascinating field, copyrights.
Yeah, totally.
Because it is kind of that thing where, you know, especially if you're working with the artist, it is trying to get them revenue streams they may not have thought about.
Exactly.
And it can be seem like a minefield when you've got a creative mind. So, if you've got people that are kind of like quite straightforward and have finance, I mean, you don't have to have a finance background, sure. But sometimes it's a little easier, I think, to navigate.
Yeah, because there's all these different, all these different little pulls that come from different sources that add up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
Yeah.
So lastly, I wanted to ask you about the changes that happened after the 30th of December last year on the master rights holders need to be aware of performers under the New Zealand Copyright Act, which is quite a massive spill there, but... Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
Like, sure.
Just a roundabout?
So the copyright, New Zealand Copyright Act had a slight amendment to it, effective 30th of December 2018, where essentially performers' rights or elements of, there's always been in a way performers' rights, but consent or assignment was required. So from anyone releasing music, so if I'm a record company and you're the artist and I'm going to put out a record for you, as such, you need to have an assignment or consent, or essentially an assignment is what you need, is from all the performers who performed on that recording to say, yes, I performed on this recording at such and such a date and blah, 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 and I'm happy for it to be exploited to the world. You know, that's in the simple side of things. There's a lot more legal sort of terms that can be used. But, because what happens is, while the performer doesn't have what we call remuneration rights for it as such, well, they can, but they have to negotiate that with the rights holder or the record company directly, they could, I guess, disrupt the release of a record. So because they could go, well, I didn't like my actual, you know, my
triangle playing.
Yeah, yep. My session or whatever, so I don't really want that to go out to the world. So previously, a lot of record companies have always done this, but... previously, I mean, you didn't really have to have it, but now you do. But it's only effective for recordings made after the 30th of December, not prior.
Yeah.
So you don't have to revisit your whole catalogue if you've made stuff over the decades. And it's just really tidies up things as such.
Because I know Australia has already had this.
It's been in for a number of years.
So it's not an uncommon thing around
No. And because this is one of the differences when we talk about copyrights and around the world as such, New Zealand doesn't have a remuneration on performers, but in other parts of the world there is. So when you play on a sound recording as a session musician, say in the UK, you're entitled to a small royalty of from that sound recording.
Yeah,
but we don't have that. So essentially we just license on behalf of the owner of the sound recording, and then what we call the direct recording artist scheme, which is the local registration scheme, that's done by contract or agreement as such. So we introduced it and the labels and everyone's sort of on board about it. And so when they sign, they actually say that they will pay and will allow us to register the artist to pay a share of that income through directly to the artist.
Mm. So Recorded Music New Zealand are always kind of looking out for things that they can do to help artists.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so it's not just this is what we do. No. It's always kind of looking at the new technology, the new revenue streams, that sort of thing, and how they can help.
Oh, we have to be across it, otherwise, you know, just not relevant anymore. So,
So if people want to get in touch with Recorded Music New Zealand or talk to you about signing up or ISRC codes, how do they do that?
Our website, recordedmusic.co.nz, from the music maker's side of things, which is if you're actually creating content, there's a tab there and there's some drop down, so it goes little bit of an intro, says to register as an artist or register as a rights holder record label. Then there's more information in regards to obligations of master rights holders and performer rights as such. There's also a drop down there from ISSC, so what's required and how you go about applying for those, and the various other things that we do.
Yeah, it's a very easy to navigate website,
yeah,
I must say.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Really good.
It's not too crazy. When we register you as an artist, we still require you to complete some documentation. But once that documentation is completed, we set you up with a portal, and then you can log in and, you know, future recordings you can add as such. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dean Cameron.
It's all right. Thanks,
Distribution
Penny.
And Member Services Manager of Recorded New Zealand. Thanks for talking us through master rights and things like that. And we'll get you back out next year, and we can talk about things like more in depth on certain topics, because it is quite a wide scope of things.
Yeah, it's the music industry is changing all the time, and there's always something around the corner. So who knows? Yeah.
Awesome, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Another friendly face to make your life a little richer. People in Your Neighbourhood on 95 BFM.